MoneyWeb now on the money.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. Sitting with Aruni Chaudhuri, he's Coface Chief Africa Economist. The Coface Risk Review, country and sector risks for June 2026, has just come out. There are two points I want to touch on. One is you've downgraded 8 countries, no upgrades. You've made 45 changes to sector assessments, 41 down, only 4 upgrades. This kind of tells the story of where we are as a global economy. And we prefaced before we came on air that things are changing and it could all be different by Monday.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I mean, yes, you know, like all economists, we know that sometimes, you know, our forecasts are not valid for very long. That's just how it is. But, you know, on the bright side, we had said, you know, in this publication that everything was very unsure and that there was basically no guarantee that the situation in the Middle East would significantly improve in the duration. And we were right. But, you know, I don't think that was very hard to forecast.
Yeah.
Anyway, one thing that we can say, and I think that our risk assessments, upgrades and downgrades mirror that, is that we are convinced that the impact of the conflict in the Middle East is going to be felt in 2026 and 2027 in a durable way. And that's because, in any case, no matter what would have happened or what has happened now, we knew that the conflict, the duration was long enough that the impacts would be felt. And so that's why our assessment kind of mirrored that, because on the global economy, we do expect quite a significant slowdown. So, you know, we're at past 2.3% in 2026 at market exchange rate. So that's like around a 0.5 percentage point downgrade relative to before the war, and also 2.5% in 2027, which means that we have, you know, a medium-term slowdown of the global economy. So obviously, with this shock, all countries and all sectors are not going to be affected, you know, in the same way, nor at the same time, because, you know, in case of an energy shock, the transmission to inflation, and then the impact on consumers and corporates, there will be lags. And so that is why we do think that the risk level are going to be worse off, you know, during this year and the next. And that is why we are gone in this direction. And, you know, obviously, we have not excluded the adverse scenario. You know, the market has been very optimistic. We've seen that on oil prices, notably. We were not that optimistic, precisely because we thought that the adverse scenario should not be cast aside, because there was and there is a risk that the conflict intensifies. It's that if that will happen or no, we will see. But we do know that perhaps the lull that we were expecting will not be as long as we had expected, or will, you know, materialize a bit later. And that's unfortunate, but that's the reality of the world we live in, right?
And this is exactly what we've seen in the last couple of days with increased tensions and missile attacks in Iran. But it also talks to the bigger picture. You mentioned there 2026 and 2027. In other words, someone looking right now and thinking, you know what, ultimately President Trump wants to make peace, ultimately oil prices coming down, but the impact is still going to be felt over the rest of this year and into next. I'm thinking inflation. Sure, my fuel price might come down, but some of that's kind of got baked into the numbers for now.
Yes, I mean, as you were saying, like, yes, the fuel prices might come down, but the transmission of the shock across, you know, different portions of the economy, that will not happen immediately. In fact, we can say that the shock, because the conflict has re-intensified, that the shock is not over yet, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we thought it would be kind of, it's a pause, it's a break, but it's not over. So one thing is that, yes, the fuel price will most likely be lower, first of all, lower than expected this year, unless there's an intensification, and also lower than expected next year. So that obviously means that, you know, you will have inflation that will start coming down in 2027, but it's always with a lag. And so consumers will experience higher prices in most economies around the world this year and at the beginning of the next year. Yeah. And then we also have to look at the balance sheets, basically, of countries, of consumers, and of corporates. Because one thing is that while this inflationary shock might not be as strong in terms of peak as the one, for instance, that we experienced in Ukraine, we also have to realize that the balance sheets, basically the cash flow of economic agents, are in a much worse position, because we have had several years of crises. Yeah. We have had the tightening of monetary policy. This means that for companies, basically, they still have to keep reimbursing debt that were contracted at higher levels. Even in the case of the inflationary shock, for some sectors, you know, the pricing power or the margin that they have to increase prices is not that high, because demand is still low. So that means that while the shock might be less important, like on a very absolute basis, the room to absorb the shock is actually lower. And that is also true about countries, because the fiscal space of most countries has been eroded because of all of the intervention that was needed during the pandemic, after the war in Ukraine, during the monetary tightening, and also because, well, countries have been basically spending too much in the past 2 decades. So that means that there's also less room to intervene and to support the economy if required. And this is also true of consumers. So we're seeing in some advanced economies that, first of all, consumers are wary of the future because everything is very chaotic and uncertain. Yeah. So they tend to save more, consume less. And so those impacts and the effect that will have on the economy on the broader sense, on insolvencies, for instance, on the capacity to contract debt, that will actually materialize later. And that is why we are saying that even in 2027, while the immediate impact of the shock might be absorbed, balance sheets basically will still not be under pressure.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about it. And even just at a consumer level, that balance sheet. As a last question, to bring it back to South Africa, and particularly the GDP, we were, and maybe we were naive, but as a country, we came into 2026 with a fair bit of hope and optimism, particularly around our GDP. To be clear, not the 3, 4, 5% we really need, but maybe a 1.8 or maybe a 2%. And you've come out, I mean, your forecast is 0.8 for this year and 1% for next year. We're an economy that remains, frankly, stuck in a zero growth environment.
Yes, I mean, that has been real of the South African economy for decades now. Yeah, yeah. And yes, I mean, you know, we were expecting, and I was also expecting some momentum before the crisis. But the issue with South Africa is, first of all, it's an emerging economy. Mm-hmm. It's the most developed on the continent. So basically, when you have an energy shock, it is actually relatively more affected than less developed countries, because the industries do depend on oil transport, you know, all of the exporting industries, commodity, agriculture. These are oil-dependent industries. So while there has been like no immediate supply disruptions or not very large ones, the price effect still material. And when you look, I mean, obviously the Q1 GDP figures, they should be taken, you know, with a bit of caveats, because that's before the beginning of the crisis. The Q1 figures were actually not that bad, but basically the trends that we had seen in the past quarters, those still continue to materialize, which is that basically South African growth is driven mostly by services, a bit by agriculture also, because we were expecting that because the rains had been very good in the La Nina period, but that in the side, on the industrial side, that basically, you know, manufacturing and mining are still stuck with very low demand. And so that will continue into this year, except that if we have an increase in inflation, because the service sectors was driven by good consumption because inflation had been very low. That's why the target was changed. So now with, you know, a bit more inflation, you have a bit less consumption. Mm-hmm. But that is also why we are at this stagnant level, in the sense that the shock, it has not highly distorted the growth outlook, because my forecast was actually not that high even before the shock, because I had this under consideration. But it's not, you know, an extremely recessionary shock as well. But I will add that below 1% growth basically means that on the average, the country is continuing to get poorer because the population growth rate exceeds 1.7%. That is the main issue. I will say that on the bright side, though, you know, you had the removal from the FATA gray list, the fiscal situation has improved a bit, the energy system is now more stable. And so, you know, one can only hope that if the reforms continue, despite this shock, that now it will be slightly later, but maybe at the end of 2027 or 2028, we have a slightly stronger momentum. But that is the thing. I mean, the policy, the economic policies that have been implemented, which were good in the past years, have to be continued despite this shock, because that's what will grip the drive. South Africa's economy has been resilient to shocks, but also the resilience is also part of why it stagnates. It's because there's a big distortion into the growth engines, the growth drivers. Yeah. And so some portions of the economy continue to perform. If you have a big financial sectors, I mean, financial flows in this crisis have been very, very large. There's been a lot of transactions. Markets have generally held quite well. So that kind of shows that where the pockets of growth are, and the problem in South Africa is that the pockets of growth are not sufficient to have a stronger growth rate.
Yeah, but like your point, we need to hold the line on those reforms regardless of what's happening. And even it's tough, but we need to continue doing the right thing and not necessarily the popular thing. We'll leave it there. So Sweni Chindera, he's a co-first chief Africa economist. Always appreciate the insights.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions.